Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, everybody, let's hang tight and look for landing radar.
What guns?
No guidance.
We'll need that landing radar by 18,000 with this soundtrack.
Roger.
On the pings.
Roger, I copy guidance. Okay, we got data back.
Radar flight looks good.
Roger.
2,000 feet.
Roger. 2,000 foot delta H. I'm going around the horn. Make your go-no-goes based on the data you had prior to LOS. I see we got it back. Give you another few seconds.
We're going fine.
Okay, retro.
Go.
Fido.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Telcom.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Ecom.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Capcom. We're go to continue. PDI.
Coming to you live from the slopes of the ghost-filled Sierra Nevada gold country and in the paranormally active shadow of Mount Rainier, it's Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio with your hosts, John Almada and Kat Lang.
Okay, show number 3. We are on the air. Hello, Kat.
Hello.
Hello, my dear.
Hello.
It's a rainy day here in California. We're sitting here with oak trees. It looks like Sherwood Forest outside when the light's out. And I take it you were expecting snow there in Washington State.
We may be getting a slight dusting of it. That's about it. I have not seen anything yet.
Well, that's good. At least you're not going to have things sliding around like that last big storm, I remember. But
no.
We have quite a show planned here. We've got some basic news is we've got an expansion of the show to 90 minutes from 60 because there was just so much that went on in the last one and we just didn't quite have enough time. So we decided to try expanding to 90 minutes and see how it goes.
Upgrade.
And so the first half hour is going to be us going over some paranormal news, things that are in the news that are happening about out there in the real world, evidence that we've collected at Ghost Rider Investigations, play some EVPs that we've picked up along the way from the Bailey House. And what else do we have? We've also got the live call-in number, which is 646-478-0377 for any call-in guests who wish to drop in on us. You're manning the chat line. I see you're talking with one of our guests, Marcia, from Journey Paranormal Society, who will be on with Sharon Coyle at 8:30 for a one-hour talk from, I believe, the Queen Mary. So I think we're going to have quite a time there. And they've been on that ship quite a few times. When I went through their website and looked around, they've done some pretty interesting things. They're based out of Southern California and just do some really interesting work. And I had the opportunity to hunt with them, October 31st on board the USS Hornet for an overnight stay, and it was very good. Oh, I see Marcia is saying hello, John, and I'm going to say hello, Marcia, back on the on the chat there. So, oh, Sharon is there too. Hello, Sharon. I'm trying to talk and not type at the same time, so I'll just say hello from here. Let's talk about some of the news. And I think I shared some of this with you, Kat, just before, but let's start with some things in the world of the paranormal. And this is sort of not quite paranormal, but I just thought it was neat. It turns out that scientists are saying now they can teleport matter more than 3 feet. And they've got the ability to do a Star Trek type of teleportation, the ability to basically duplicate matter from one place to the other. So it'd be like a copy machine. And I thought that was just amazing. You know, it's getting closer and closer to Star Trek replicators. So who knows? I mean, this is going to be some interesting stuff. Do you think?
Do these ytterbium ions, do they exist in humans?
What's that?
The ytterbium ions are what they are. Actually, what they did was they isolated a ytterbium ion surrounded by small metal balls to keep it from, to keep it isolated, and they transported it 3 feet.
Yeah.
So, my question is, do these ytterbium ions exist in human beings? Because I know in the past, especially, I know former President Bush actually signed a law that stated that they could not clone human beings. That's after they had cloned that Molly, the sheep.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem that they're going to run into is humans have such a vast difference in DNA sequences that it would be really hard to keep your DNA sequence in a program so they could just go, okay, this is John's sequence, now we're going to transport him.
Yeah, it's a fundamental question. There's something called the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, and it basically says that you cannot predict where an atom is going to be at any one point in time with any real reliability. So you magnify that by the sheer number of atoms in a human being, or, you know, even a small pebble for that matter, and, you know, it's a Herculean task. But, you know, the interesting thing is that they could even do this with a single molecule is the same as what happened in the early days of computing, you know, when we had, vacuum state computers that had less power than my watch, that took up an entire room in the power of a city. So I think that the next 100 years, you know, I mean, you and I won't be around for this, but I do think that it looks to me like that's going to be something that happens.
Well, you know, I don't think I'd want to be the one that they experiment on. That I can guarantee you.
Okay, and I definitely don't want to be like the fly either. You know, it's kind of not a good thing to have happen. Okay, let's move on to the next item. It turns out there's a new ghost-busting suburban cop show, of all things. It's coming out at an unspecified time on the A&E television network.
Right.
And it's going to be called Paranormal Cops. And it has to do with police officers who happen to get into the paranormal because of various experiences they had, and using their police investigative skills coupled
right.
with paranormal investigation, which should be an interesting show, I tend to think.
Well, they're out of Chicago, and
I
wish them, you know, the best of luck with their show. I would like to see a paranormal show that isn't really so gung-ho on getting all this evidence any way they can and getting exposed for the frauds they are. I'd rather see a show, and maybe these police officers can pull it up, where they're just a little more analytical about it. And I think when I read the article about the show, they had commented on in the article that since they're cops, they're trained to analyze everything.
Yeah, trained observers, that's exactly right.
So maybe we can learn from them. I don't know. I wish them all the success in their paranormal endeavors.
Yeah, I just think, it's just interesting to see yet another show coming on board. Although, the one that just was recently on, Ghost Adventures, which... I'm actually finding myself enjoying that one more and more because that guy's just got he's got huevos, you know.
Is that the Zach show?
Yeah, Zach. He just goes right in there. I mean, he does stuff I would never think of doing. And, they had the episode where they went into the insane asylum.
Yeah, that was last night. That was great.
Oh. Well, that thing where the hand jumped out and grabbed at them, and, you know, it was similar to... I thought that the same sorts of energy and feelings existed there as what we experienced over at the Wolf Manor when I was there in last November 29th and 30th. Very, very confused, very dark energies in these places. And so to be locked in there. I could not imagine being locked in Wolf Manor for an entire night and walk out of there in the morning without having had some really interesting experiences. Just walking around there with 30 people and having what we had happen was just amazing. But on to the last news item here. We've got from WDSU.com, News Radio, was the Paraplex Laboratory of Paranormal Museum. I said this all wrong. It's a paranormal museum and a laboratory on Canal Street in New Orleans.
Yes, it is. That actually used to be a haunted house. It's featured on hauntworld.com. And it's a old mortuary, and they have had it as a haunted house for years. And I'd heard about a year ago they were thinking about turning it into this museum.
Yeah,
and it's great to see that they have.
Yeah, it's equipped with 40 infrared and thermal imaging cameras on a 24x7 basis, and
mm-hmm.
they're basically just, you know, it's a hunt that goes on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd hate to have all their evidence investigation. I'm sure they probably have it in shifts with volunteers, but you know they're going to miss a few things. It's hard enough when we're out in the field doing what we do, you know.
I think what they're probably going to do is they're going to feature their webcams online so you can watch them and you can make little comments if you see anything. They have one on the Queen Mary. They have one at different asylums. They have it's asylum cams is what they call them. And you can sit and watch these cameras, and if you see something, you can freeze the frame and send the shot in and make comments and what time you saw it. And I think that they might make that just as interactive as they can.
Well, I just think it's interesting. This looks like it's going to become one of a whole class of these sorts
right.
of things that begin opening up around the country, given... But I'm not sure how I feel about it, but it's, you know, it's there, it's happening, and, you know, if you're in New Orleans, I guess it's the place to be. Anyway, that said, let's go on to, let me get my show notes out here. Me and a friend of mine out here in the Shingle Springs area went out to the Bailey House, and the Bailey House, we've talked about it on the last show. And I had done some more evidence analysis and on this particular place. This is located in a town called Pilot Hill. It's just about midway between the town of Placerville and Auburn, California. And it's this giant brick home. It's just huge. This thing has just got many thousands of square feet of space. So it's three stories above ground and a giant wine cellar underground. Was all blocked off. It's the place to be that every investigator out here in our neck of the woods wants to get into. And it turned out that Christine and I managed to just by chance run into the one of the caretakers, and he was kind enough to give us a guided tour. And I just happened to have my EVP recorder with me, and Christine had her camera, and we managed to collect quite a few things. And Christine did, I believe, get a shot of a shadow, and I'm going to have to talk to her about getting that loaded on the website. But we played a few EVPs from the last show, and I thought I'd load up a few more and just go ahead and play these. And I'll just kind of go over what I've got here. This one is what we call Two Guys. And what it was that we had... we were making a comment about how people were moving furniture into this place up these stairs. And we made the comment and got this basic answer here. Now, I'm going to play that a little bit louder. Here we go, at 100%. Now, do you hear it at the end, Two Guys?
Yeah, I can hear them. I just can't hear what they're saying.
Yeah, when you have better headphones on, it's basically saying that it took two guys, and it was a direct answer. The strange thing with the EVPs in Bailey House is that you would get these kind of melodic noises that when you, and I really don't know how these are classified, but there are these sounds that when you start to put them together and play them over and over, you begin to understand that this is words that are slightly out of phase. And so that's the kind of EVPs that we were getting constantly. But we did get some extremely clear ones, and this is one where we were talking about the activity in the house, and suddenly we get this clear voice out of the blue on that we didn't hear. And I'll go ahead and play this.
A little bit.
It's, there were only, there was one woman and two men, and it was neither of the men's voices, and it says, it's a little dead. And they seem to have a sense of humor at this place. I just thought it was an interesting capture. There were quite a few clear, very clear Class A captures there. We got quite an opportunity getting in there. It is possible to get EVPs on the outside. We've done that too. I've been there repeatedly and done work on the outside. But to get in and get what we got was awesome. Now we're going to play the final EVP from Bailey House. Was we picked up a woman or a child's voice that was kind of interspersed with some talking that was going on. And I'll go ahead and play this a couple of times.
Just take your nice.
Did you hear that?
That's a little happy-go-lucky young lady.
Yeah, it was like this. Here, I'll play it one more time.
Just take your nice slow.
That was weird.
It almost sounds like she's saying pretty, then
Yeah, and all through there, it was just a combination of male voices and then these kind of playful, childlike or womanly voices that were just kind of happy. Only a couple of get-outs with the usual obligatory get-outs and grumpy people. I think that's a universal constant with EVPs. There has to be somebody in a haunted place that's just saying, get out. And
Christine's in the chat room.
Oh, Christine's there? Oh, she's off talking. Hey, Christine, good to see you out there. I hope that, I hope maybe if you call in, maybe you'll make a comment or two. Anyway, Miss Kat, we were talking about some of the evidence that you had and different things that you had been reviewing from your past cases. And did you have anything?
Well, I think one of the most interesting cases that I was on, I had gotten a investigation at a place out here called the St. Helens Bed and Breakfast, which is I worked very hard to get this investigation. And we went up there and got some really interesting evidence out of the place and some really good Class A EVPs and some really just personal experiences. But up at the St. Helens Bed and Breakfast, there's a door, an old fire door up on the second floor where all the bedrooms, most of the bedrooms are, that closes. It used to close every night at, I think, around midnight. Mm-hmm. But this guy and his wife own it, and I talked to him extensively, and he said that the door closes at different times. And I thought that was kind of interesting. So when we were up there, I sat up until almost, I think, a little bit after 4 o'clock in the morning. It was like a standoff. Because I knew that somebody wanted to shut that door, but they don't shut the door when you can see them doing it. So we had a camera down at the bottom of the stairs that was trained on this door.
Okay.
The camera died a few minutes before the door closed, and I fell asleep, and I was asleep, like, instantly, and the door shut, and I never even heard it. And it's a metal door, and it slammed, and we got it on audio. And we got it on recorder, but we didn't get actual footage of it because whatever it is that shuts that door waited for the camera to shut off.
Yeah, I don't know how they understand these devices and how these things work. It's just, you know, it's like they're just totally aware of the function and know when to, you know, when to strike. It's like with EVPs. I mean, if you were to take and, you know, really analyze EVPs quite a bit and you start looking at when they break in, it's like right after someone finishes speaking, it's just right on the mark, right when they quit.
And, I've had it happen a couple of times on investigations. The cameras, another investigation we did, the cameras inexplicably died, and then we got activity. And we were like, oh, great.
Well,
so they killed the cameras.
I don't know.
And then we got activity, so.
And go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, you got that evidence on audio, and were able to hear it actually slamming.
Right.
Did you wake up after it slammed?
No.
You had a long night.
Oh, we were. In fact, it was interesting because when we first got up to this place, we'd set up and kind of did a walkthrough, and then we were all in separate bedrooms. We were going to take a nap. And I was in this room called the Blue Room, or the it had cats on the towels, so it was like the cat room. So I took it naturally. And I was just kind of laying on the bed, and there's this big wooden door, and it all of a sudden, because it was shut, and it unlatched, and it opened. And I just kind of looked to see if somebody was going to come through it, and then I heard a couple of little kids like snickering, like laughing, and I thought, oh, this is going to be kind of fun.
Oh. I haven't had that yet, although I've been growled at on board the USS Hornet. I was with one of the docents in the surgical room and had that experience. There's two surgical rooms just outside the main bunk area for all the patients, and we actually slept in there. And it was a very interesting place. A lot of ship noises, a lot of crazy things going on, but I can't remember this gal's name. She was on a liveaboard program. She was a former Navy officer and had taken the job aboard Hornet. And we were standing there talking, and I just had set a recorder down on the actual operating table. And we heard a distinct growl. And I looked at her, she looked at me, and we decided to clear out of there. I mean, it's... you're just not prepared for that kind of thing, you know?
No.
Yeah, I'll take little kids any day to something growling at you, but, you know, we did go back in repeatedly after that, and I did catch some other evidence, which I'll play that Sharon and I had been talking in the evening, and I set a recorder up just not too far behind where her video camera was, and I never got to ask her about if she got the video, anything on that video. So, you know, when we get going on that interview, I'm definitely going to remember that. But a lot of strange noises aboard Hornet. It was just an amazing ship, and a lot of interesting things occur, and the stories that you hear, the amount of EMF activity and the things that happened with, you know, the some of the devices that we had never seen before. I'm trying to remember the name of this thing, the Ovilus. Yeah, the Ovilus. I got to see the Ovilus actually working, and I was on the fence about it for a long time, but there was some interesting things happened when we went down deep in the bowels of the ship down into one of the kitchen areas and did a session with the spirit of some gentleman who supposedly had been injured in an accident where he had, I believe it was oil or something, poured all over him, and he was literally burned to death.
Ew.
Oh, yeah. And he knew the docent, the chief docent, whose name was Keith aboard Hornet. And it was Keith is the guy that Taps worked with in that episode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we actually were pegging around with Keith. And this Ovilus kept on referring to Keith. And all these strange things were going on, you know, and things that were relevant, words were coming out of this that were relevant to the conversation, and it was kind of on the edge of maddening sometimes, because sometimes it kind of would do what it would want to, but then
right.
It would say the most striking things, and And at one point it said something so shocking to and everybody kind of looked, and I stood up, and it comes on and says, sit down. And everybody looks at me, and I'm standing there like, oh, okay.
Well, I guess I better sit down then, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I did, and it seemed to get better. But, you know, I mean, that ship, it just had so much going on. And I did a drop recorder in one section where of the sick bay. And what I mean by a drop recorder is I'll take a EVP recorder and just tuck it away where no one sees it. And part of the reason for that is just being objective. You want to be able to see if you're going to catch anybody doing anything funny, you know. People do fake things. And I just wanted to see if there's going to be anything like that. And it turned out we just caught an unbelievable amount of noises and different things. And then at one point during that five-hour recording session on that recorder, we picked up an interaction between two investigators and who actually witnessed an apparition materialize in the very area where I was sleeping, within about, I believe, 10 feet of my particular bunk. So I caught the whole thing, plus an EVP of this ghost responding to them with a hello.
Wow.
Actually, not a ghost spirit, but it was a very, very fascinating time aboard Hornet, and I want to go back and definitely hunt again with Journey Paranormal. I mean, they did a great job with that and kept us all from killing ourselves in there, because there's a lot of places that you can really get hurt aboard that ship, and they did just a really quality job. We're coming up on 4 minutes from half past the hour, so we're going to be kind of winding it down a little bit, and then we'll take a brief break. And when we come back, we're going to have our guests, Sharon Coyle and Marcia Miller, telling us all about Journey Paranormal Society. And I think that's going to be awesome. But anyway, Kat, since we got a few more minutes, what other cases in your particular neck of the woods? Are you working still on that place, that one spot with that house that had the all the tragic events?
Oh, that's built over a graveyard?
Oh, yeah, that's the one.
Well, we'd like to get back in there. The house itself is still in probate. So we kind of have to be careful when we go in there. We went in there once, and we'd really like to go in there again, but we kind of have to wait until it's all the legal wranglings are done and over with, and everything's kind of at an even keel. So when that occurs, we'll certainly try to get back in there. And the owner of the house is a little freaked out that it's built over a graveyard. He didn't know that.
I don't know. I think I would just get the wrecking ball if it gets too crazy. You know, take all the valuables out and start over someplace else. You know, the thing that gets me is, I mean, we mentioned it in the last show about that place, is it's just surprising that no one bothered to tell them that they were on that land. And I'm beginning to think it's just good practice when you do buy real estate to basically have someone, you know, sensitive come in and do a check of it.
Well, you know, a couple miles down the road from where I live is Cherokee Burial Grounds, and they built condos over it.
Oh, I'll bet they're having a time of it.
They're still there. No, I'm sure they are.
Well, I think I'm just going to feel good about me living on top of a gold mine with three or four buried folks here right on the property we're broadcasting from. So,
that's right.
Yeah, we have had our share of shadows and doors opening and closing themselves, although it's been a little quiet lately.
Right.
You and I know all about that.
Yep, exactly.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to go ahead and take a brief break. I'll go ahead and pop on the break music, and then give it a few minutes, and then we'll bring Sharon and Marcia aboard. So with that, we'll take our break, and everybody can do their, what I'm just going to go ahead and call it what it is. It's a tinkle break, okay? So everybody do their thing, and we'll be back very soon. Okay, we're back.
Hello.
Hello. Do we have some guests on the air with us?
Well, this is Sharon. I'm not sure if Marsha's there.
Well,
this is Marsha.
Just...
I'm here.
Okay. Hey, guys.
Hi,
welcome
how are
aboard.
You? Hi, Kat.
Hi.
Yeah. Well, hey, are you guys still aboard the U.S. Or the Queen Mary? I was going to say Hornet, but the Queen Mary?
I'm on the Queen Mary with Jessica. And Marsha, I'm not quite sure what her 20 is right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm actually in Ventura right now. I'm at home.
Okay. Well, hey, it's great to have you guys aboard. And, you know, I had a great time hunting with both of you guys aboard Hornet. And, you know, we've been talking back and forth, you know, Sharon and me, about maybe doing some kind of a joint investigation, meet halfway in the middle, you know, probably Modesto or, you know, some, you know, area around there in the future to do some investigation work. But, you know, I was just curious how you two actually got started with Journey Paranormal. And so I thought I'll throw the question to you. How did you guys get together and how did it all start?
That's a Marsha question.
Well, ironically, ironically enough, Sharon and I met at the Queen Mary, where she is right now. It's kind of funny you asked that question today. We actually met at an event, it was really kind of funny because the whole entire time the event was happening, we were there for 3 days. Chance just kept throwing us in each other's paths while we were there, and we just exchanged numbers and. We decided to go to another event at the USS Hornet and decided to carpool together. Well, I'm sorry?
Speaking of which, because John just brought that up, too.
Yes, speaking of which, we went to the USS Hornet on another investigation, and we got to ride together in the car for 5-6 hours and went to the Hornet, and then on the way back, we just decided that we wanted to, we've been to so many events, different kinds of events and different things, we thought we would throw together a paranormal group closer to where we live, and we really just had a love for the paranormal, and ever since then, we have been doing different events and different things. That's why we decided to do the Halloween event at the USS Hornet, just to kind of, since that was where we began it all the ideas of Journey Paranormal, was at the Hornet. So then that's where you met us, John, at the Hornet. So so it's kind of funny how it's all kind of going in circles from the Queen Mary to, and we are also going to be doing another event coming up here at Prospect Place in Ohio. So Prospect Mansion in March, it's another, our next event coming up. So I posted our website on the chat board, but for those of you who are just listening, it's www.journeyparanormalsociety.com. And we are putting together different events and different things, but really our goal is just to really help educate the community and help the community with any kind of paranormal activities that they might have or any kind of questions that we might have. So,
so you do – oh, go ahead.
I'll let Sharon add anything if she wants to say anything.
Well, nothing in particular, just that you mentioned our event at Prospect Place, and we have Stacey Jones from New York. She's the founder of New York Central Ghost Hunters Group. She's also known as Ghost Cup. She's been on A Haunting and several other television shows. She's coming out, and I might have another added surprise that even Marsha doesn't know about, but just came about here, that we might have another special guest come out that has a radio show and does some very interesting classes, and so check back at the website in about a week or less, and there'll be an added surprise when they have another speaker coming.
Okay. And I see that you know, in your intros on the website that it's here we have Sharon, that you're a psychic photographer and sensitive, and Marsha, you're a healer and sensitive.
Yeah.
And so you, I take it you use these, you know, in your casework when you're out in the field?
Yes, we do actually. Both of us use our different talents with the different things that we have. I know for me, I'm going to be getting my master's degree here pretty soon in metaphysical science, and we'll also be an ordained minister, so I'll be able to conduct any kind of house blessings or anything like that, which is will be kind of exciting. But yeah, we both do use our talents in different investigations, different things we go. It helps us out really to be able to get the feel of the place and different things like that. I know a lot of times Sharon and I like to go in blindsided and just to kind of see what we pick up and see what we can find with our photos and different feelings and things that we get during the investigations.
Well, how long have you been at this? I mean, it seems like you're a fairly mature group.
Well, the group itself is the team has only been together about a year, but both Marcia and I have had experiences for years within the paranormal and studying different aspects of it. I grew up in New Hampshire and was always around active places and always had interest and read about it and such. And Marcia had a huge interest when she was a young person. So it's always been a part of our lives. I think it's just, as with anything, you know, life sometimes takes over and different interests go by the wayside and then they can become resurrected again in a stronger fashion. And the timing was just right. I mean, the timing was clicking. I had been with another group for a while prior to meeting Marcia, and then I was an investigator without a group with her for a while, and then the whole journey paranormal came about.
Yeah, that's exactly how GRI started. It's just been a collection of personal investigations and suddenly hooking up with people like Christine up here and, you know, Kat up in Washington State. And suddenly it just turns into an organization before you know it. And, you know, you start getting cases and things just start happening. And boy, oh boy. Speaking of cases, I mean, what are some of the more memorable cases that you've had in the past and things that have happened? And, you know, share some war stories with us.
Well, can't really talk too much about, of course, in private investigations, but one of our, I know I can say collectively, and I'll speak for Marcia on this and she'll jump in, but one of our favorite ones was actually Rolling Hills Insane Asylum up in East Bethany, New York. For me, it was my first real experience with shadow people, and it was quite an interesting couple of days. Went there on another group's investigation. It was kind of an open investigation event kind of thing with a conference. Mm-hmm. And Marcia and I had the luxury of being able to investigate 3 days in a row or 3 nights in a row. And the first night we were on a private investigation actually with Stacey Jones, and we had some pretty amazing things happen, including Marcia was being touched and groped quite a lot by the ghosties. And she has a way with those.
Man, that ain't right.
Yeah, that ain't right.
That just ain't right.
So we had an experience where we were using a hack box in one of the rooms, and Marcia was continually getting poked and touched. Did I lose you? Because I'm on a cell phone in the Queen Mary, and sometimes I don't know which day.
No,
are you there?
You're still here.
Okay, good. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not moving, but you never know what happens. So anyways, there was a spirit that kept saying it was going to do something, I said, okay, well, wait, I'm going to jump over on the other side of her vision so I can actually take a photograph. And I took a photograph, and just as somebody was touching her, something was touching her, and a huge hand manifested, and that was pretty phenomenal.
Wow.
So...
Just so all of you are aware, too, the website that I posted for our the JourneyParanormalSociety.com, we do have the evidence pictures there. You can actually see the pictures of what she's talking about at our website. So I just wanted to kind of throw that out there.
And one of Marcia's favorite shadow people is Roy, and I think you can tell a story about Roy better than I can.
Yeah, Roy is a spirit at Rolling Hills Asylum who he had gigantism, and he pretty much spent the majority of his life at the asylum and died there. And Roy is a serious rock star. I mean, he pretty much comes out on command. He is a huge shadow person. And the cool thing about Roy is that we were on the what they call the shadow people floor. And it's basically a floor where you can basically just go and stand in the middle and turn off all of your lights and everything and just be and let the room be. And you'll see shadow people coming out of the walls, out of the hallways, different things like that, like all over the place. And then there's Roy. Roy will come out, and he is so big that he literally blocks out the entire, almost the entire doorway, except for the very top where you can see his head, and the light will kind of shine through there. But Roy is pretty amazing. He likes to communicate. He uses the K2 meter a lot. You can communicate with him with the K2 meter, yes or no. He gets really excited about things, and he's just really amazing. I believe firmly that he really does love Rolling Hills Asylum and protects it. If he feels like somebody's, you know, threatening Rolling Hills, he'll just appear and kind of scare them because his size is just so huge. But he's kind of interesting because he has a little bit of a mask to him, which basically means that you can't see through him, which is interesting because a lot of shadow people, they are shadows, which means you can pretty much see through them for the most part. But with Roy, he has a pretty thick mask to him, and it's really amazing how he could just kind of appear and, like, disappear. But yet he's really the center of attention. If you ever want experience or ever there, just go to Rolling Hills and go on the, I believe it's the second floor, right, Sharon, isn't it? The second floor or third?
There's the basement and the main floor, and I think it's the second floor, but they may call it the third floor.
The third floor, yeah. Because you can go there and just call out for Roy and say, hey, Roy, we're here to see you, man. You're a rock star, or whatever you want to say. He pops out. I mean, he's just like, he loves attention. He's really great. I love him. I every time I've been there, like, I actually cried when I left Rolling Hills because I felt very much attached to that place. And, like, just this, the energy there is amazing. I mean, it's especially for those people who are sensitive or, you know, have any kind of sensitivity to spirits. I mean, you get so attached there, and it's just such an amazing place. I mean, for all those ghost hunters out there listening, or paranormal investigators, or people even just interested in the paranormal, if I could suggest anywhere to go visit, it would definitely be Rolling Hills, and that's in East Bethany, New York. It's an amazing place to go.
Now, that this Roy character, did he ever say when he lived, and was there any other, is there personal information about him that's, you know, that you can actually verify?
Lori Carlson, the owner, has a lot of the history and actual check-in when people moved in, because it used to be the Genesee County Poor Farm. So people would come and live there because they lost their farms or they lost their husband and they couldn't keep, you know, the family going. Orphans would go and live there, people that were mentally unstable. So she does have a lot of the records. Unfortunately, a lot of the death records aren't necessarily available because some of the people who passed were literally buried out in the field, a potter's field.
That's very common, especially with those sorts of institutions. They just never were great with their records.
Right. But she does have a lot that she can verify, and Lori is on that list.
Well, one of the people in the chat room asked if anyone knows how Roy did die. Has he ever said anything about himself or his background?
Yeah, I actually just answered her in the chat room as well, but he died of gigantism.
Okay.
He didn't die of anything other than just the fact that
disease.
When you have he just died of that disease. So.
In death, he basically mirrors this in the this shadow. He's just this huge shadow person. He kind of mirrors that then.
Yeah. He was a gentle spirit. He's like a big gentle, you know, gentle giant in life, and it's really funny because you get that sense that he's just a gentle soul. Like, he's kind of childlike, which is really fun, you know, because you can, as long as you're giving him praise, he's a happy camper, and he's just like a big kid. He loves the attention, you know. So,
why would they put somebody like that in an asylum for having that disease? I mean, that doesn't make sense.
Well, actually, what happened was that his father was really embarrassed by him, and because of his disease and being abnormally large, and so they sent him away, and they just kind of abandoned him and sent him there. And from what I understand, at one point when Lori was going through some artifacts of the location of the Rolling Hills, they actually found a whole bunch of, like, Valentine's cards and Christmas cards and things of that sort that were never sent to his father or returned because his father didn't want anything to do with him. So, you know, what being ostracized in life, now he's reveled, and people go there to meet him, if you will, in his spirit. And that's why he's so happy, and that's why he's such a pleasant entity to be around, and so actively willing to show himself.
Well, I'm going to make sure that we put a link for this place up. And again, it's the Rolling Hills.
It's either under Rolling Hills Insane Asylum, or they might have changed it to Rolling Hills Research Center. And actually, John, that would be lovely if you did that, because Lori and her family bought the place, and they almost lost it the first couple of 2-3 years they owned it. It's a huge place. It's really hard to maintain. They have to close it in the winter because of being in upstate New York. Pipes burst, and they can't keep it heated. So, it would be really wonderful if you did that. And anybody that is interested in investing there or even doing a donation or something. It's a very beautiful historical location. It's the middle of a field. It's gorgeous. It's like in the middle of Four Corners in this, like, little podunk, if you will, town. And I can say podunk because I grew up in a one-yellow light-blinking town. So I can say that and get away with it, not sound condescending. But it's just a really small, beautiful, you know, town, and it's just in the middle of this gorgeous setting, and it's a shame that if anything would have happened to it. So.
Okay, we'll do that. And as far as anything else in that particular facility, were there any other things that you've had happen? I mean, you know, besides Roy, or people you've run into there that more shadow people who've made themselves known? Or?
Oh, the place is full of stuff. I mean, Marcia and I, we were with a group of maybe 10 or 15 people in Shadow Person Hallway, and we were just about ready to, actually, Stacey Jones was about ready to call them out and have them come, and all of a sudden, we're looking, and there are these two, like, running lights, if you will, red beam lights, like almost laser pointers, but parallel to each other, and they went scurrying right across the ceiling, and we all saw it. There was like 10 of us right there, and we were like, whoa, did you see that? And nobody had a laser pointer, and no one would have had two that could have been able to make that action, and we all saw it with our eyes. That was pretty amazing, don't you think, Marcia?
Yeah, it definitely was. And, you know, I went there the very next day, and for another, because like I said, Sharon and I were very blessed to be able to have 3 days there. And I went there the very next day on another private investigation. I was actually not with Sharon at this point. I was with some other investigators. And we were on the Shadow People hallway doing the Shadow People thing. And at the very end of the hallway, we kept hearing, which is where Sharon and I saw those lights, we kept hearing what sounded like somebody breaking glass or throwing something. This was at the end of the atrium down there, or the solarium. And a certain investigator kept telling me to go down there. He said, come on, let's go check it out. Let's go check it out. And every time we went down there, there was nothing down there. But then the moment we walked like halfway through, you could hear broken glass or you could hear somebody running or a different place like that. It was pretty amazing. So that place has so many things going on in it. And I believe that there was only don't quote me on this, but I think there was about 600 people who died in that hospital, if not more, or it's not a hospital anymore, but that location, you know, because at one time it was an orphanage, it was a poorhouse, there's so many things going on there. And it's so active just with so many things besides Shadow People. I mean, Sharon and I went, before we went to the airport, we had to go back. Both of us were completely drawn to this place. And we went back and took pictures during broad daylight. And, I mean, we've got full-blown images of spirits looking out the windows at us. You can see right through them. You can see physical faces and everything. So not only is there activity on the inside, but we were also getting activity in pictures outside, feelings outside, different things like that. So, you know, it's an amazing place. So that is one of our most favorite places that we've investigated. So,
And you guys have been to the one in Fresno. The the name escapes
Wolf
me.
Manor.
Right.
Wolf Manor.
Wolf Manor. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys were going to do that one investigation, you know, early this year, and then it kind of fell through with all the maintenance and stuff they were doing. But I kind of got the jump on you guys and went in November. And what a place.
Good thing you did, because I would have felt bad if you didn't make it up there, because it's a very interesting place. I mean, I would have rather had you come with us, but
yeah,
but I'm glad you were able to make it.
Yeah, I decided to do it, and, you know, I'm a sensitive myself, and I got in there, and let me tell you, for 3 days afterwards, it felt like I'd been through the ringer. The same sort of thing. I mean, you had these just entities all around you, and it was just one EVP after another, walking through there. And Dave and Debbie Constantino, I believe it is, hosted some sessions down in the basement, and my K2 was just going crazy down there while they were talking. And the gal next to me, it wasn't doing anything. But as far as, you know, your experiences there, what things did you have happen when you investigated there?
Oh, my goodness, Marsha. I'll let you start with the living room part, even though that was in the middle of the evening.
Yeah. Well, Sharon and I were, we were with a pretty big group of people, and they were in one side of, they were in the kitchen area, and we were told by one of the people to go into the living room, just Sharon and I, and he told us, he said, just sit there, don't do anything, you know, just, you know, see what happens. So Sharon and I, you know, obeyed. We went in there and sat down and turned off all of our equipment, and, you know, it was, like, literally so black in front of us that we could not, like, see anything. Mm-hmm. And we sat there for, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 minutes, and all of a sudden we saw a man in a white lab coat walk right across in front of us and then disappear into the wall. And at first we thought it was the guy that was with us, and we were like, Barry, like that. We were like wondering if it was him, and then all of a sudden I looked at Sharon and she looked at me and we're like, oh, yeah, did you just see that? Like, what the heck? You know what I mean? It was just like a full-blown apparition of a man in a white lab coat just walked on by like he was, you know, going off and doing his thing. And, you know, it was pretty freaky. Sharon, I believe, even picked up her camera, and you got a picture of that, right, Sharon?
Yeah, I think it's on the website, actually.
Yeah.
You can see like a blur, but you can actually see like the shape of a body, and then you can see the movement of the light energy of him spinning and walking around. But it's pretty vertical shot, and you can really see the body there. You can't make out a lot of definition. You can make out the body, but you can't tell, you know, his face or anything like that.
Well, was this on the second floor, you said?
On the main floor, like when you come in the front door, the living room on your left, right?
Yeah.
Across the stairway. It's in that living room where you sit on the couch that is back to the porch, and you're facing the kitchen. There's that buffet. He came in from the doorway from that little summer kitchen or the little pantry area that's in between the kitchen and the living room. He came in that door, like walked over to the buffet or the hutch, and turned around and walked back out through that door.
And you, the both of you saw this, and I'll bet your faces were...
Oh, it would have been priceless to have a camera on us, I'm sure.
Oh, I believe it.
Our faces were hilarious. I mean, I my mouth kind of dropped because originally I thought it was Barry who told us to go in there, and I was like, Barry? Like,
we both started
like,
saying at the exact same time, and then we realized, and we both stopped instantaneously at the same time, like, wait, it's not Barry, you know, kind of thing, you know?
Was it funny. Was it Barry Fitzgerald you were with there?
Yeah, it was.
I hunted with him there, and very interesting character, and he took us through some of those places, and I have never felt more cold spots, you know, back to back, just all through there. And I actually was, he asked for sensitives, and I sat in the kitchen. I said, yeah, I'm one, and he put me front and center in the kitchen. And I had no idea I was on camera when all this was going on. And I started, you know, tuning into the place, and I just got incredible sadness and just a horrible feeling. And I got a woman named Elizabeth who talked about how she'd been basically raped and murdered, and the death had been covered up there, and a lot of that seemed to have gone on in that place. It was just hideous. And just going up into the second floor, you know, in Mary's room, I believe, have you done, you were in there, I'm sure, and had some things happen.
It's kind of a little funny, not a really funny story, but it's a little weird story. We got lost going from the hotel to Wolfman. I wasn't driving, and neither was Marsha, and that's all I'm saying. So we're not that bad, but we got lost, which is like, you know, it's only like 4 miles down the road from the Clovis, from the Fresno hotels, and we got lost. We were like an hour late. I mean, it was just really ridiculous. But anyway, so we come blowing in an hour late into the investigation, and we're like, I know I'm in a tizzy. And so they're saying, all right, go upstairs to Mary's room, and Robin's waiting for you. So Rob was up in Mary's room, and I'm trying to set the video camera, and I'm having trouble because I have this new, you know, finagled thing on it. Oh, geez, don't even ask. But we're taking pictures and doing EVPs, and all of a sudden I went over to the closet, which was painted black. I don't know if it was still like that when you went there, the inside of that closet.
Oh, yeah,
in area.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was open, and I kept saying, there's something in the closet. Well, there's nothing physically in the closet. I mean, we walked in there. You could see there was nothing physically in the closet. And I don't know why I felt that way. Well, I'm learning to trust my whatever comes out of my mouth, because it tends to be more right than it is wrong on those kind of occasions. I ended up taking a picture of a man who either hung himself or was hung. And it's very clear. You can see the noose around his neck, and it's quite disturbing, actually, and I'd like to find out who the poor man is.
Well, it's funny because when I did my EVP sessions up there, I sat on the chair next to, you know, Mary's bed,
mm-hmm.
and everybody was in free for all investigation. You know, after 4 hours or so, and so I was sitting up there, and when I got back home, I did my analysis, and I had this two distinctly different EVPs. One was this voice running up to, you could hear it literally walk up to the recorder, and it says, "You, I hate, out." And it just,
oh, wow.
I wonder if it correlates with the guy that you're talking about. And then there was another guy, you heard this man yowling. It was this horrible, and he's just making these noises. And what's really interesting about that is he made this noise, and then he kind of fades off. Then way off in the distance, about 30 seconds later, you hear him in another room doing the same thing. So there's this man that's walking around. It's either a residual or, you know, a very confused spirit who's walking around in there just making these god-awful noises. You know, the place is just packed. I mean,
It is.
Yeah. in the number of EMFs, you know, and no power in the building, and you're getting EMF spikes that are just going through the roof,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then they suddenly disappear, and you go back, and there's no reason, you know, why. But I know what you mean about the blackness.
Uh-huh.
I walked into one of the rooms in the second floor, and I can't remember which one it was, but it had like this chair where they kind of left it up there where they would strap the guys in, and I don't know what they were doing. Yeah, and it was just brutally cold in there when the rest of the place was, you know, significantly warmer, and very just powerful blackness. I've never seen anything quite like that, and I've heard other investigators talk about that, but that was my first experience with that, just to see that, you know, out of the blue, it looks, you know, there's plenty of light everywhere else, and suddenly you're just caught up in this atmosphere.
It's there, and it's a strange darkness. It's like a thick darkness, which is hard to describe that, but and maybe a strange way of saying it, but it's a thick darkness.
It's something like you could almost cut through it. And when you get away from it, you feel better. So, you know, definitely an interesting place, but anyway, I can see we're on the half-hour break here, and I'm going to just take about 2 minutes, give everybody a little bit of time to, you know, take a tinkle break or whatever they need, and then get back with you too. So are you you'll hang around and wait for us?
Sure. I'm sitting here on the floor on the M deck of the Queen Mary, and Jessica's walking, one of our soon-to-be team members is walking around the ship, first time here, and I'm sitting here taking pictures, and I'm getting stuff in the hallway of
well,
the hallway.
All right. Well, hey, we'll talk about some of what you're currently doing, and then go on to a little bit of evidence that I wanted to ask you guys about, and go forward from there. So we'll go ahead and take a quick break and come back in about 2 or 3 minutes, and you're listening to Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio on Blog Talk Radio. we're going to be speaking with our good friends from Journey Paranormal, and that's Sharon Coyle and Marcia Miller. And we have Sharon aboard the Queen Mary, currently doing some investigation work. And why don't you tell us what's been going on the Queen Mary, since you're where I'd love to be right now.
I love this place. I love her. It's one of my favorite places. I live over in Huntington, so it's rather close. There's been an event going on yesterday, today, and tomorrow called Ghost Fest, and they have some speakers, interesting speakers, all different types of topics, from EVPs to basic Paranormal 101 equipment, and then there's some private investigations going on later on this evening. There'll be a seance, which I'm not participating in, but it's going to be, not that I have anything's wrong with that, but I'm just not doing it, down in the cargo hold, which is a fascinating place. And then there's another paranormal investigation at 1 o'clock in the morning that Jessica and I are doing. There should be about 30 people on that, 30 or 40 people going on that, so it should be really wonderful. It's a very active ship. And so I haven't really done much today except being in the classes, but while I'm on the phone with you, Jessica is walking up and down the hallways. I'm sitting here taking pictures while I'm talking, and I get two people that are walking beside her about maybe 15 feet back from her, and they weren't there when she was walking down there. So.
Oh, my God. You got it on film?
Yeah, I got it on my camera, just sitting here.
Oh, we got to see this.
Yeah, it's really, I had her look at you. There was no one beside me. There was no one behind me. There was no one down there.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's quite an active ship.
It's similar to Hornet in that respect, then. There's just constant activity going on. You know,
it has constant activity. I mean, it's just pretty phenomenal. It used to be a warship. And then, of course, it was turned into a cruise line, and then it was turned into this hotel. I mean, it just has a wealth of history. In fact, I have a friend in New Hampshire who's in her 70s, and when she was a young teenager and early adult, she sailed on the Queen Mary 6 or 7 times out of New York, going back and forth to England to go to school. So for me, I walk up and down, you know, the decks, and I think how my friend Linda must have walked up and down the decks when she was 18, 19 years old.
Yeah,
on the ocean.
I remember reading that that ship had like the record for the most number of soldiers ever transported at once, and it was on the order of 15, 16, 17,000 soldiers.
It was close to 17,000. It was like 16,682 or something. I just happened to see the big picture of it today when I was going through some of the exhibits. I did it periodically, and I just happened to see that again today. I was bowed over by it. It was just amazing.
Well, with regard to the evidence I'm sure you've investigated it a number of times before then. What other sorts of things have you picked up?
Oh, well, it's funny you should ask, because one of the first experiences Marcia and I had as investigators together was on when we met at the Queen Mary, and we were down in the pool. And the pool is, first-class swimming pool is very famous for a couple of things. It has a vortex. A supposed vortex in the dressing room area, and then it also has a couple of spirits, a little girl named Sarah, another little girl named Jackie, who is very well known in the paranormal field for having being very active down there, and a negative entity named Henry. Well, we were with some very famous celebrity ghost hunters, and doing a private investigation. Well, I don't want to name names necessarily, but I'm sure everybody knows who it is.
We were
on a private investigation that we did on for charity, so I'm only saying it for that. And there was about 6 of us down there, and we had 2K2 meters, and I videotaped it for about an hour, and this Jackie entity was completely active, making the K2 meters go off in time with the tune of London Bridges, all kinds of questions. I mean, it's pretty phenomenal. One of the celebrity investigators actually asked for a copy of the video because they were like, oh, my God, are you getting that? I've never seen anything like it before. They were blown away by how active she was. And,
wow.
And Marcia can attest to it. It was pretty amazing. And she's actually had some really interesting personal one-on-one experiences with Jackie.
Yeah, Jackie is Jackie's also one of my favorite spirits that I like to visit when I can. I just wanted to add, too, that I've also had experiences with her in the pool room where I've actually played tag with her using a K2 meter, and just, you know, my sensitivity and my, you know, being able to really, like, figure out where she is and different things like that. And I've actually felt her little hand tag me, you know, on my leg and one time on my butt because she, you know, came up from behind. But, yeah, I absolutely adore Jackie. I love going there. I can feel her presence there. She's just such a cute little girl. So,
you know, that's the amazing thing I find with all of this. You know, out here where I live, you know, we've got, you know, gold-rushed ghosts. And but we have definitely definite personalities. One in particular that I have gotten to know is a man named William Palmer, a famous cattle rancher out here. And he's quite a character. He comments quite a bit when I drop by the cemetery just across the freeway from where I'm at.
How nice.
Oh, yeah. He's just an amazing character. He was my first Class A EVP. And matter of fact, I think I have him on an EVP here. I could actually load it up. But, you know, it just struck me that when you're talking, both of you are talking, it's the same sort of thing that I'm starting to observe. There's real relationships that come into play, where you're developing, when you go back to a site over and over again, you get to know these people.
Mm-hmm.
And you refer to them in the first person as friends, you know, and you start talking to them in the now. And it's, you know, it's funny because when you talk to some folks who don't really quite understand this, they look at you like you're a little off center, you know. But it's just amazing. I mean, you really feel them there, and you feel their presence, and you feel their energy, and it's just an awesome thing.
Yeah, let me stutter some more, Sharon. Yes, there are so many spirits and many entities and places that we go that I've become very fond of. Jackie's one. There's another gentleman that's very well known here on the ship. His name is John. He had used to be like an engineer, worked in the engine room, and he used to apparently have a really like prankster kind of attitude. And when they'd have drills, and all the watertight doors would have to shut, he would wait till the very last second and say, oh, I can make it through. Let's see how long it can be before I can actually squeeze through before the door slam. Well, unfortunately, he didn't make it one time, and he got slammed in door 13 and died. And he's very active in the engine room. And I've had a couple of really interesting experiences with him, including being able to take a picture of him just a few months ago, and I put that on the website. But he just really loves people. I think he was around 22 or 23 when he died, and he just really enjoys the company down there.
Well, I'm just amazed, though, at the amount of stuff that's going on aboard there. I'm going to have to get down there now. You got me wanting to come down. How long are you going to be there for?
Probably just until about 3 or 4 in the morning. I mean, I live half an hour away, so I'll drive home. But I come back here periodically. It's so close. And we can have a meetup there, you know. We can have a meetup here to start the journey, and that would be great because I always look for an excuse to come.
Well, I'll grab the GRI Mustang and load him up, and we'll grab Kat and me, and we'll head down.
We should actually do that because, you know, we can rent a room, a huge room, and split it for a base camp thing, and then you guys can just stay over. I mean, we do that a lot. Sorry, I just made a noise. We do that a lot. We'll do it with some other groups where, you know, 8 or 10 people chip in on a huge, you know, double room or, you know, a suite, and we just store our equipment there and go back and forth and wander around the ship, and then, you know, whoever's going to stay, you know, obviously pays more and stays the night. And it makes it for a really interesting time. And right now, I just think I work for the Queen Mary, but all California residents can get on board for free.
All right.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, it's not like we haven't all slept in the same room since Hornet when we were all in that crazy place there.
That's true. I'm anxious to go back, actually. I've been thinking about that weird little thing that was walking through the door that I really want to find out what that is.
Well, as a matter of fact, I happen to have uploaded some of the EVPs from there. I had a couple we played on the other Blog Talk show that I called into, but I also had the wolf whistle. Remember when you and I had you finished your video and had just set up, and you and I were kind of the last two to go in and bunk down?
Okay, yeah, we really need to get a picture of me and put it with the wolf whistle, and people will see the humor in that, because it was really, I looked like a homeless person that found her clothes and picked them up off the street, matched them all together. I mean, I was sad looking.
Well, all I know is, all I know is you two ladies were getting the whistles, okay? So you should feel good that you had the sailors after you.
I don't know. Aren't they usually trapped at sea for like months at a time, and anything looks good at that point? I don't know. Apparently I'm the proven case on that one.
Well, here, I'm going to go ahead and play it. It was this was picked up just as we had started to walk out. I had put the recorder in I think operating room number one, which was off to the left and just behind your camera. So I'm going to go ahead and play this at 100%. I'll play it a couple of times. Now, we were getting those noises all the time. Remember when we were in there and we had walked through? I'm not sure if you guys, it was one or both of you. We were all walking around doing our various split-team investigations, and we were getting that same sort of whistling was jumping back and forth around sick bay. And from
I think it was you throwing your voice. I'm just teasing.
What's that?
I said I think it was you throwing your voice.
No,
throwing
yeah, that was
whistle.
Just me. Yeah, that was me. Yeah, right.
no, I'm just teasing you. I'm just teasing you.
The amount of noise in that place at night, and when we were, I was laying there in my bunk, and I would just hear, you would hear footsteps all going up and down the corridors, and there was nobody out there. You know,
yeah.
Did you have a lot of that before when you've been on Hornet?
There was a really interesting thing that happened. We were in a different part of the ship, and I can't remember what it was actually called, but it was way down by, like, the bow, because it was very pointy down that way, and it was underneath the, you know, it was, like, way down. It was the opposite end from where we were.
Yeah.
And it might have even been down one more floor. I'm not sure, Marcia. Was it down one more level? Yeah, it was one more. So, but we were segregated at that point. They put all the girls together and all the boys together, and we thought, you know, we're not going to do that again. It's more fun if you're all together. But anyway, so one thing that happened in the morning, and Marsha will tell you something that she heard in the middle of the night, but one thing I heard in the morning, it got to be about 6 or 6:30, and all of a sudden I can hear, and it sounded like it was coming, like, through the wall, which is virtually impossible, but you could hear a pinch, like that. And then you could hear people talking, and I thought it was some of the girls waking up. I said, yeah, did you hear that? And then I heard nothing, like the girls weren't talking. And then I could hear them snoring, so I knew it wasn't, well, not really snoring, but breathing heavy, you know, like they were still asleep. And then about an hour later, so everyone was getting up because of revelry and that whole, you know, how that whole announcement goes. But, and I asked if anybody heard that, and they didn't hear that. Marcia heard it, and our other friend Elaine heard it. But it wasn't there. It was like a ambient, you know, electronic noise phenomena that we heard. Not electronic, but it was a noise phenomena that we heard.
Yeah,
it was really loud. It woke me up. Like, it woke me up to the point where, like, I was just like, and I even said, Sharon? Like, because it was just like, both of us, we weren't sure what we heard, and I said, okay, on the count of three, let's say what we heard. You know, mm-hmm. We did, like, one, two, three, and we both went, attention, like, really loud, because we were like, what the hell? What was that all about? Like, it was just like, it was completely unnerving, because, like, a little bit before that, I was sleeping, and I strategically, because this is the first time I've ever actually stayed in a haunted place overnight, so, you know, I wanted to be a brave paranormal investigator, but I was kind of scared, you know, inside, so I, like, purposely put my bunk right where I could, like, go out of the room really quickly if I needed to, and, like, basically, like, right there. So, like, I was, like, sleeping there, and I, like, it was bundled up because I was freezing, so I looked like a little, you know, I don't know, Tootsie Roll wrapped up in my little sleeping bag because it was so cold that night. But I remember, like, in the middle of the night, because I was kind of, like I said, I was a little scared, so it took me a while to actually go to sleep. And just as I started to fall asleep, I heard, we were sleeping right next to the bathrooms. And I'm sure, John, as you remember, some of those bathrooms, they had shower curtains with the metal things that when you close them, they made that really awful noise against the metal, you know, the metal against the metal. Well, I heard, like, right before we heard the attention, probably like 2 hours before, I heard what sounded like every single stall shower curtain closing. And, like, I heard them and went, like shoo, 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 like all the way down, like all the way across, and it was really loud. And I kind of looked around and nobody else heard it. So I'm like, okay, dare I go check this out by myself? Should I go do it, you know? And I thought about it, and I was like, nah, I was too scared because, like I said, it was my first time. You know, Big Bad Paranormal Investigator was scared, so I didn't go. So
what was really interesting, though, is because these were over the bat, like, it's like pee and shower in the same little stall. I'm sure you know that.
Oh, yeah.
So, of course, all the ladies, before they went to bed, they all were in there and doing what they needed to do, wash the face and blah, blah, blah. So all the curtains were, most of the curtains were open. So in the morning, after all this other stuff happened, we went back in, all the curtains were closed.
And not only were they closed, but they were like, they were closed pretty much aligned the same exact way every shower curtain. Instead of like, because the shower curtains, you know, as you know, John, they were all like, it was hard to close them in general, but they were closed like completely straight. And it was like, every one of them was perfect. And so I, you know, that was like, it really freaked me out. So I remember when we had the opportunity the second time to do the Hornet for the Halloween event that you went to, we had an option to choose from the torpedo birthing area or the sick bay. Well, the torpedo one's where I heard that. And I was like, you know what? I already experienced plenty of the torpedo. I'm staying in the sick bay this time. So, but yeah, it's, the, that ship is absolutely awesome. I mean, I don't think that there's a time that I have personally been where I've not experienced something.
Yeah,
so.
Well, you remember I accidentally got turned around when we first just started the investigations, and I took an accidental turn right out of the wrong, you know, doorway, and I ended up over by the museum area, over by the bomb elevator section. And I had an infrared camera, and I'm walking through, and I realized my mistake, and I turned around. I thought I could just cross-connect back and go back towards sick bay. Well, I found out I couldn't, so I flipped around, and I'd heard a noise off to my left, and as I turned around and walked back, got to almost turn almost to the end of the hall past that glass museum area, and I heard a big noise behind me, and I swung the camera around, and I've got this on my website. And I walked back. First I said, oh, my God, what's going on? And I'm here all alone, and I'm going to have to investigate this. And I know the fear that you're talking about. You're like, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I was looking for a Scooby snack so I could, you know, go in and save, you know. But I eventually got my nerve up, and I went back there, and I look, and there's no one there. And as I went to turn and walk away, it did it again right then. And this thing was playing with me the whole way. And so I had three or four interactions there, and I finally just turned around, and I felt like somebody was walking next to me laughing at me. I could just feel this guy. And later on, matter of fact, I got back, Sharon, you kind of chewed me out for getting lost. But,
oh, sure.
And I was
maybe
like, oh. But you were looking out for me. And I ended up talking to that docent who was, I think, Keith's girlfriend, who was dressed up in a Raggedy Ann Andy.
Winter.
Andis.
Yeah.
Winter,
yeah.
Yeah, and she told the story of that I was not the first to have that experience in there. And it turned out that there had been a gentleman who had been killed when a bomb fell on him in the bomb elevator that he wasn't supposed to be riding in during an attack on the ship. And
mm-hmm.
he literally was crushed to death. And that's the spot, I believe, where he died. And so, you know, it was a pretty interesting piece of evidence. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, sit there and say that, you know, that's just, you know, that was definitely this guy, but watch the video. it's really good stuff, and I'm probably the first to ever capture that particular thing on tape. So
yeah, I'd like to see that actually, because I have an interesting photograph from the first time I was there that I think was taken around or in that same elevator.
Mm-hmm.
That I want to. I'll watch your video and I'll send you the photograph, and we can see if we can, maybe it's a matchup of some sort, because it would be really interesting to see. I think it was in the same area. And it's quite disturbing looking, actually.
Yeah, matter of fact, I mean, when I turned, and at the very moment when I heard the first or the second noise, just as I was getting ready to go through the bulkhead and turn left back to sick bay, I looked through the glass and I saw a shadow moving around in there. And that was what really kind of got me. I mean, it you know, the hair raises up on you. It's just a natural human reaction. You know you're in there alone, and yet
mm-hmm.
you're not. So it was just a very interesting place. But what I do have is a couple of pieces of evidence here. We'll play a couple more. I have that one that we played on the last show that I was on with you guys, the Get Out. Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
That thing shrieked. I'll go ahead and play this at just full volume, and you'll definitely hear this. And you're going to hear a bunch of stomping around, which is there was nobody doing that. We would have all heard it. But we caught that all night, and then suddenly this at the very end, you'll hear this shrieking Get Out noise. So here we go. Did you guys hear that?
Yeah, we heard that. And
so, yeah.
Sorry, we heard some chains rattling. Some guy walked by with the chains on his boots, so sorry about that.
Yeah, it. And what was interesting is something kept touching the microphone on the recorder. You'd hear little ticking noises on the recorder itself, which was just, that happened all night. And then we picked up another one. I'll play this last one from Hornet, which was the sonar noises, which we picked up a number of those during the evening, and I'll just pop this on real quick. Yeah, that I never heard anything like that. In your prior investigations, did you hear anything like that on that ship?
I didn't hear anything like sonar. We did hear something else, but not sonar.
Well, I can tell you one thing. I hope when you guys go back, let me know, because we're going to go in there and do some real good stuff.
That would be really great. I mean, I actually just bought for the team a 16-channel DVR system. So
all right.
That should be pretty good. Yeah.
Well,
we'll have a lot of places to put that up.
Well, I'll definitely be glad to drive out there and work with you guys then.
Awesome.
And, okay. Well, hey, we're approaching the last 3 minutes of the show, so I'm going to just say, hey, we've had a really great time with both of you. You guys just do some really good work, and I'm sure, you know, looking forward to have you on the show again and working with you in the field.
Thanks, John, but I mean, Kat, you're just going to have to not talk so much, Kat. I actually want to get to know you. I want to ask you some questions about Washington sometime, so hopefully we can continue a conversation off air in the future. Must have lost her.
No, I'm here.
Okay.
I don't want to interrupt.
No, you're not interrupting, hon. Well, I think let's start with maybe recite off some of the websites or anything that you have that you want to share about future events that are coming up. So just to remind folks what Journey Paranormal is going to be doing.
Well, Journey Paranormal has Prospect Place Mansion, March 20th and 21st in Trinway, Ohio. You can come for one night or two nights or, you know, spend the whole weekend there. You can sleep there and spend the whole weekend. You don't get a private room. It's going to be slumber party style. I will throw in with the ticket, besides you're getting all your beverages and continental breakfast for free, you also get a sleeping bag for free this time. I'm throwing in a sleeping bag for those who don't have sleeping bags, a complimentary one, I should say. And we have Stacey Jones and another surprise thing that will be announced within the next week or so. So that should be really great. On the sidebar, Dr. Barry Taff, who used to teach at UCLA Parapsychology Lab back in the 70s, he's was instrumental in the investigative case that was better known as The Entity, turned into The Entity movie, and a lot of other cases. We're going to be presenting his conference program soon that will be available. It'll be 3 4-week sessions. We're going to start in Southern California, and I'm sure we'll be willing to go in other areas of the state and out of state. But that should be a very exciting thing. It'll be his actual course that he ran at UCLA. So that's going to be pretty phenomenal. So, right. And I'll let Marcia talk about some other stuff.
Well, we're on our last 30 seconds, so what I'll ask is if you guys just want to pop that in an email, you know, some of that, and I'll go ahead and just throw that on our website, because we're going to drop off on the automatic cutoff here in 20 seconds. So I just wanted to say
thanks
thank
for having
you.
Us.
Yes, thank you, and good hunting aboard, you know, Queen Mary, and to everybody, thank you for tuning in tonight. It was a great show.
And good luck with the new show. It was great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. All right, guys. I think we're off. And
well, thanks. That was great. Thank you. You did an excellent job.
Well, appreciate it. You know, we're still being recorded, but so we won't talk. You know, go crazy here, but you know, it was just a lot of fun. I mean, I had no idea back in October I'd be doing this, and the next thing I know, I'm setting up a studio, and whammo, it's, you know, here we are on our third show already. So, you know,
that's
you guys. What's that?
That's what happens when you're in the paranormal. Things kind of take over on you, and you don't realize it in a good way.
No. Well, hey, you know, anytime you need a, you know, you got something you want to talk about, or you got some great evidence you want to share, you know, just let me know, and we'll bring you guys aboard, and you know, schedule an hour, half hour, an hour, and just go for it. So,
oh, great! I have to tell you guys, just having a chance to talk to Marcia, but Jessica and I went down into the engine room earlier this afternoon, and we picked up the sound of a register flute. Recorder, one of those old recorder flutes. When you were a kid, you used to get one of those little flutes called a recorder.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in the engine room, and you could hear it audibly with our ears, and it showed up on the recording. And I've never heard any musical anything down there. It's an engine room.
My God.
So
we actually heard it with your ears.
We heard it with our ears, and we couldn't figure it out. Now, there were people going in and out because the ship is open to the public at that point. But, I mean, there was nobody that had anything like a cell phone out that maybe had rung, or like a kid with a musical toy or anything like that. There was nothing like that going on. And it even happened in times when there was no foot traffic there at all. It was very interesting. That's never happened to me down there. So I'm hoping to get back in there in a little while and see if it happens again.
I've had audibles over at this little cemetery that I've kind of adopted, Shingle Springs Cemetery. I've had, you know, William Palmer actually speak out loud, and I've heard him. And the weird part is it didn't show up on the recorder. I hate that when that happens. It's you know you heard it.
Mm-hmm.
You heard it, you know, loud and clear, and it doesn't show up. And then you'll get these occasionally you'll hear these musical tones and things that do show up on the recorder, and you hear it with your ears. And you're like, what in the heck is that? And what is this music thing all about? And why are they playing music for us from the other side? I mean, is it just some sort of announcement thing, or is it a, you know, a call waiting noise? I mean, what is it?
It was so strange. I mean, I've heard a lot of things on the ship and not heard a lot of things that got recorded, but the music just threw me for a little bit of a loop because we're in the engine room. It wouldn't even be a normal place where, like, the guys would be hanging out doing something like that. So that was just strange. I'm interested to go back down there, though. So.
Wow. Well, you know, if you guys ever want to, you know, share some of the evidence and, you know, toss it my way, you know, since you get it on your page and all that, let me know. And I'll be glad to hear some stuff that you guys have got going on. I was going to talk about your Nordhoff Cemetery evidence. I was over here looking at some of that, and that just was some really good stuff. You know, especially the paranormal porn one.
I actually got that in my bag. I live in a townhome, and that is behind our clubhouse. There's like a little dog park area.
Yeah.
That's where that is, behind my house.
Yeah, that's, you know what, that's the weirdest thing, because we get the same thing here. We've got these, you know, we've got these mining areas right outside, 300 feet to my left right from my studio right now, where we get things like that all the time. And here you are, you're going all over the place, and you get really great stuff right out your back door.
Yeah, but you don't get ghosties having porn moments, do you? I mean, that was pretty weird. That was pretty weird. I mean, that's just weird. But, I mean, it's nice to know that there's love in the afterlife. So that's a positive thing, I guess. Love continues.
Something to look forward to after death.
Yeah. Some people get more in the afterlife than they do in the real life. I don't know. But, that was really interesting.
I had one where I was joking about this spirit was, somebody was saying about get a life, and And I basically told, said something out loud in the middle of this investigation. I said, well, why don't you tell this spirit to get a death? And when we did the EVP, we got it back, and this EVP, this guy's laughing at us. He thought it was funny.
Oh, my God.
He's
that
like,
was like, Marsha,
yeah.
Marsha, are you still on the phone?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, you should tell him about when we were at Lizzie Borden's and they were laughing at us. And laughing
at
you.
Yeah.
They were mouthing at me. I had my, like, again, like Sharon said, like, the spirits just love to pick on me. Like, they just find it quite humorous to touch me and mess with me. And I actually had my shoes stolen, like, flat out stolen, and they just disappeared. And so for 2 hours, we were doing EVP work trying to find what they've done with my shoes, because that was the only pair of shoes I had, and we were leaving to fly home the next day. We had been investigating for 9 days between, you know, all these different places that we went, and I was tired, I was grumpy, I was like, I want my shoes, right? So for like 2 hours, I was like trying to do EVPs, and I was like talking to Sharon, and I was like, what happened to my shoes? And we hear it back, we listen back, and you hear, disappeared. I'm like, yeah, really? You think? Can I have my shoes back? Like, you know, and so then I was like, I was talking to Sharon, I go, God, why do they always pick on me? And then when you listen to the EVP, you heard me say, why do they always pick on me? And then you heard a male voice go, why do they always pick on me? Like, totally laughing at me.
Mocking.
Mocking me. And then I was walking, and I was like, what is this? What do you think I am, Nancy Drew, and this is the case of the missing shoes? Can I have my shoes back, please? And I was just, like, being, like, really, because at this point I was getting mad, because I was like, okay, it's been, like, almost 2 hours. I want my shoes back. And then finally I'm like, fine, let's barter. So Sharon, I go, we'll barter something. And Sharon goes, we'll give you a sock. And I'm like, how about some, I was like, how about some jewelry?
I thought it was Bobby. I don't know.
So then we started.
What are they
going to
do with
like,
the sock? I mean, God.
I don't know.
It was really funny.
In my head.
We were, but you know what's funny is that the funny thing is that when we actually did play it back, and we listed off a couple of things, and they listed that they wanted a sock, a ring, and a bracelet. And so I said, okay, fine. So we went upstairs and we gathered our belongings, and we said, okay. And I said, okay, I'm putting the stuff on Lizzie's bed. And right when I put them on the bed, you hear this thunk, thunk, like my shoes were being dropped. I was like, my shoes! Yes, where are my shoes? So
that's
we
amazing.
Ended up finding my shoes. Yeah, so we ended up finding my shoes, like, underneath the sofa where Lizzie Borden killed her father. And weird thing is that I had called another investigator who had done a lot of events at Lizzie Borden, and I said, dude, I kind of freaked out to the fact that they, first of all, took my shoes and they disappeared, and second of all, they ended up on a completely different floor, like underneath, basically like if where the bed was where they had gotten stolen was directly above on the different floor where they dropped them. And so I was talking to him, and I was like telling him what happened. He goes, yeah, he goes, we did a group investigation there, they had like an event there. And he said that a girl's purse was stolen and the guy's wallet was stolen. The guy never got his wallet back, but the girl's purse, they did, like, a whole thing, and the girl's purse, like, ended up being dropped in the same place where my shoes were dropped. So,
my God, you got a spirit that kites all your stuff. That ain't right.
Well, you know what it is, though? Lizzie had some cousins or something that lived in the house next door, and the little children were drowned in the well of her house. And so it might have been
the tenth. Well, we've got one here on our place, and we think it's actually a relative of mine who passed from mesothelioma back in 2003. And he likes to play tricks on us, and he'll open doors right in front of us, and it's just unnerving as hell. You never know when it's going to happen. But I was laying in bed one day. I was sleeping up at the main house because of my father's situation, and my dad was in the hospital. And so I was up there just another company. And the next thing I knew, I woke up and I felt like somebody was in the room, and all of a sudden I felt someone blow on my back. And my back was just, slightly, the sheets were slightly off of it. And I felt this definite breath, warm breath on my back. And I jumped up and look around, and there's no one there. And I could just, in my mind's eye, I could see Mike sitting there laughing his, what off at me. And, you know, the constant tricks, you know, it's better to have them doing that rather than stealing your stuff, you know. But now I know what the monetary units are in the spirit world. It's a sock and what else?
A sock, a bracelet, and a ring.
Okay, so yeah, it's like pennies, nickels. Okay, yeah, we'll work up to the dollars. We've got to find out what they like for that, you know.
Oh, God, I tell you, it was just so funny. It was
Well, hey, guys. Well, you know, I'm probably keeping you from your investigation stuff and all that, but gosh, I mean, this has just been really great having you. And
thanks.
Yeah, so, you know, go get them and come back with some great evidence. And, you know, I'll definitely look at doing a hookup. I'll talk with Kat about coming down and drive down together and meet you guys there sometime.
All right. Sounds fun.
Okay. Well, hey.
Thank you.
Take care, and it was great seeing you.
You too, guys. Have a great night and have a good weekend.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.